Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, film editor for Las Vegas Weekly, and joining me is Tony Macklin, author of the book Voices from the Set, film critic and film historian. You can find him online at tonymacklin.net. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
So
I hope it's my pleasure.
Yes. Well, I think it'll be enjoyable. I think usually at the end of the year, Tony's my traditional guest here to talk about the best movies of the year, and that's exactly what we're doing right now, to talk about the best movies of 2011.
I think I like / favorite, because okay. I'm not sure my list is the best movies.
Well,
certainly
that's fair.
In terms of the public.
Well, it's all subjective.
It's your favorite movies.
Right.
It's the best for me.
Right. And that's fair. I feel the same. I mean, it's obviously subjective, and in any case, you always have to say that. We didn't see every single movie that was released this year.
It sure seemed like we did.
it
seemed
did.
Like they were all 2.5 stars, too.
No, I agree. I definitely felt like maybe a month or so ago, trying to create a preliminary list, thinking I couldn't even find 10 movies that I really, really liked. And I got to the point now where I'm a little more pleased with this list. But
well, I've lived with my list for two weeks, and I was afraid I'd really want to change and tweak it. I haven't. Mm-hmm. I do want to add an asterisk.
Okay.
Make this my addendum or my 11th or 10th and a half.
Okay.
Every year I try and find a movie that I can recommend to everybody.
Yeah.
And I didn't until recently.
Okay.
And I can recommend to everybody, it probably shouldn't be on my best 10, so it's in its own category.
Uh-huh.
But The Muppets.
Yeah,
I really
Muppets, yes.
thought it's a fun film yes. that I can tell everybody to go see.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I don't have that on my list either, but I did enjoy that movie, and I think you're right that it's got a very wide appeal, and that's always nice. It was probably a good thing for families over the holidays and things like that. Well, so let's get to your actual list, and we'll just start it off. What was your 10th pick?
Well, my 10th is, and I don't believe in guilty pleasures, but I guess this is a guilty pleasure because nobody else in the Western world really liked this film. The most fun I had at the movies, maybe I was on something or I was in a space warp, but I really had fun at Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh.
And you read the reviews, and yeah. if I try and recommend it to people,
yeah, I don't think I had any
cringe
fun at
that movie. I just enjoy. Daniel Craig, I like, Harrison Ford, Sam Rockwell, Olivia Wilde, wonderful cast, I thought, and obviously it's a weird collision of genres, but it took me back to going to Saturday matinees
yeah.
when I didn't think.
I would never think that you, of all people, would be an advocate of not thinking at the movies.
Well, That's why it's a semi-guilty pleasure.
All right. I don't think I got any pleasure out of that movie. And I was hoping.
I was one of the few.
Yeah. I like Westerns, and I like Aliens, and I like Daniel Craig. But Daniel Craig was in some crap this year. He was in Dreamhouse as well, which I hope you didn't see. But that was a really terrible horror movie. But, you know, he was in some better stuff. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
So. Absolutely. He's one of my favorite actors.
Yeah, but I don't think Cowboys and Aliens is amongst his best work.
Okay, we want to hear from your 10th pick.
So my 10th pick is a movie that made me laugh and it made me cry. When I would never think that I would have a movie with Seth Rogen on my list, but I really liked 50-50 with Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I know you're a big fan of
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
And I thought, even though Seth Rogen was a little Seth Rogen-y in this movie, that it worked because that was sort of the idea of his character, that he was the glib, sarcastic guy, and he has to deal with his friend has cancer now. And the movie's as much about how people in this guy's life handle the fact that he's sick as it is about the guy himself, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, handling this disease at a very young age. And I thought it was really effective.
It.
Yeah.
It's a good film.
Yeah. I liked that it didn't pull back on the humor, and even though there was definitely serious stuff, it was still a funny movie throughout. So,
but it makes me wonder about what Joseph Gordon-Levitt is going to do with his career.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was going to be, if not James Dean, Montgomery Clift, or somebody who had fire. And his films, Inception and the 100 Days of Summer Boredom or whatever, Tedium or whatever, he doesn't have the same rawness that he had in
Mysterious Skin.
Mysterious Skin. That's the one I'm thinking
of. Right, right. I know that's the one you like the most. I mean, I think he's really good. I mean, he did some other kind of indie roles around that time, too, The Lookout.
Which was very good.
Right, which was excellent. And I think, well, part of it is probably just that people noticed him in those roles and suddenly he's offered bigger movies and, you know, more high-profile parts and he's taking them. But I think even in something like 50-50, which is definitely a mainstream movie, he brings something more to that role than someone else might. That a big part of why that movie is good is because he really inhabits that character really, really well.
But I think they tap about half of his talent.
Yeah.
He really needs to find a role that it's challenging and rewarding and fulfilling, and he is able to completely show what he's got.
Right. I mean, I think he's definitely got a chance for that to still happen. I mean, he's got hopefully a long career ahead of him, and I think that definitely will come. So what was your next pick?
My next pick is personal, and I knew this man personally. In fact, in Dayton, Ohio, long, long time ago, he tried to put a George McGovern pin on me as we walked the streets of Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Ramon Estevez, Martin Sheen. And I think this is a film, again, that you just have to go with and say, okay, Emilio, I'm going on your trek. The Way,
right,
which was made by the Estevez family. I mean, if you look in the credits,
lots of Estevezes.
Lots of Estevezes. And it's a spiritual movie, and he is a strong Roman Catholic, and I'm certainly lapsed from all religious consciousness.
Right.
But I think for what they wanted, it was really a personal, potent attempt that succeeded more than it failed. Mm.
And this is a movie actually I didn't see. It's one that at the end of the year was among many that I had piled up there, and I didn't get a chance to see it, but I will have to give
By the
it a
way,
chance.
It's he the character played by Martin Sheen has to go and recover the remains of his son.
Right.
And then fulfills the son was kind of a wayward young man. And so he goes along the El Camino de Santiago from France to Spain,
mm-hmm.
and fulfills his son's purpose.
Right. Sort of a road movie in a way.
Yes, and in that, and it's the people he meets along the way.
Right, right. Yeah, I will have to give that one a chance now. I think I have a screener that I can watch. My number 9 pick is Hannah, with Saoirse Ronan, directed by Joe Wright. And I think this is, at its heart, it's just an action movie. It's not necessarily a movie with a whole lot of depth, but I think thanks to Joe Wright, who's an incredibly visually accomplished director.
I think he's underrated, don't you?
Yeah, I think he got a lot of attention for Atonement and for Pride and Prejudice. I think the last movie he did before this, The Soloist, was deservedly underrated. It was kind of not very good. But yeah, I think he is a little underrated, and I always am impressed with what he does visually. And so I think his approach to this material, as well as Saoirse Ronan's performance, takes it from just, it was kind of a cool action movie, to something that is really much more fascinating. That the way that it's shot, and you believe, even though it's a totally ridiculous character, this 14-year-old girl who's been raised in the wild and trained to be an assassin. I mean, come on. But because of her, thanks to her performance, you believe in that character, and you're even able to care about when she meets the normal teenagers and feels like she's missed out on things, that there's actual emotion there. So sure. I think it's definitely more than just a thriller.
But no, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, all right. Well, what's your next pick?
I had to put this on because it is a film that has tremendous power,
mm-hmm.
it's the end of a series, and for me, it ended with a whimper instead of a bang. There were a lot of big bangs during the film. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Hmm.
I was willing to say an evocative goodbye to Radcliffe and Emma Watson, who is in an adult role in My Week with Marilyn.
Right. And she's good, they're all good in that series, I think, but she's maybe the best.
Ralph Fiennes is pretty good evil.
Yeah.
I wish the ending had been better.
Yeah.
The ending really,
right.
I cringed
over
that.
The final epilogue, is that what you're talking about? Yeah, yeah.
Years later, they appear. I thought it was Mel Brooks in the old man.
It was a little ridiculous, yes. So. Yeah.
But I think it did end on it ended with strength.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think I maybe liked the previous installment a little better because this one, like you said, so many bangs. It's so much action, action, action. You don't get as much time to spend with the characters. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty satisfying wrap up for that series. My number 8 pick is a movie that actually has not opened in Las Vegas yet, and I'm hoping it will be soon. I'm not sure if there's not a date set for it yet. But it's We Need to Talk About Kevin with Tilda Swinton, who is really excellent. She's been nominated for awards for this film, and I think deservedly so. She's a great actress, and it's a really intense part where she plays the mother of a really, really horrible child who has killed a bunch of his classmates in school, and she has to sort of deal with the aftermath of that. And it's a very sort of surreal, impressionistic kind of thing. It moves back and forth in time. It's not.
Are you going to have any upper? You have cancer on your list and multiple.
I do.
Okay.
I do have all some. Right. I do have some more. Or at least one. At least one.
I mean, this isn't showing.
And the cancer movie is funny.
This isn't showing that this isn't. Josh hates everything, including himself. Right. We haven't reached that point.
No. I mean, it is an intense film, definitely. But I liked the way that it's almost more like a horror movie than a drama. I think it's not a serious social commentary about school shootings or anything like that. It's really about the horrors of parenthood, that this kid is awful and she kind of can't escape being his mother. And I thought that was fascinating.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's excellent. It's excellent. What do we got next?
On my 7th is every year I look for the film that I think is most like Hitchcock, or Hitchcock is in it in a way, and Take Shelter.
Really?
Was the one that I saw
a
lot of Hitchcock. Maybe I'm making this up. But in one point, it's about a character who becomes paranoid about the apocalypse coming, played by Michael Shannon, and his wife was Jessica Chastain, who I think she was in a lot of films. I liked her best in this.
Yeah.
But in one shot, it's in the kitchen, and there's a knife, and there's a fly that comes and sits by the knife.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from Psycho. I mean, I think that's his. I may be going somewhere that he didn't intend.
No, you may be right. That's interesting. But I love Hitchcock, and I hadn't thought of that.
I think he uses Hitchcock's sense of thrills and sense of suspense, and it's a film that I thought might not stay on my list, but it really has a place. Strong ending, I thought.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I liked the ending a lot. I liked the earlier parts of it a little less because Michael Shannon, who is a very good actor, I think is so intensely creepy that he was almost at the beginning of the movie where he's supposed to be more of just this kind of nice everyman guy, good husband and father before
his normalcy
is not normal. Yeah. I was just waiting for him to snap and kill everyone. And so that took me out of it a little. But I did like that movie, definitely.
By the way, it's a writer-director. And a lot of the films this year, the same director wrote it.
Yeah.
And that makes it auteurist.
Right.
And the author is really the man in charge. Jeff Nichols should be mentioned.
Right. He and it's excellent direction in that movie as well. I mean, there's a lot of visual stuff going on there that I thought was cool. My next pick at number 7 is, and you're asking me for uplifting. This is the most uplifting movie I saw the entire year. This movie made me happy the whole time. It's called Bill Cunningham, New York. It's a documentary about Bill Cunningham, who is a photographer, a fashion photographer for the New York Times. He's 80 years old and still out there every day riding his bike around New York City, taking pictures of people. And it's just a really joyous portrait of this guy who's had an amazing life. He's been doing what he loves for 50 plus years and still loves it and is still dedicated to it. And I love seeing stuff like that about people who care so much about their work and who are so engaged in it still.
How would you relate it to the other documentary, Page One?
I thought it was better than Page One. And in fact, I think both of them were financed partially by the Times itself. And the problem I had with Page One was that it was so unfocused, that there were a lot of interesting people in that movie, but because it tried to encompass so much, it just jumped around from one thing to another.
The reason I liked Page One was it's hard to find any film that pays attention to literature,
yeah,
or to the written word.
Right.
And I think it's like the tiger at the gates resisting change or trying to adapt to change,
yeah,
but with respect for language, still respect for the Times reporting.
Right. Well, I mean, I appreciate that about it, and it was very respectful, and it does have a lot of that stuff in that movie about the transition from print to digital and things like that. And I didn't dislike Page One necessarily, but I felt like watching this movie, I was thinking, oh, I wish – I mean, and maybe it's unfair to say, oh, I wish Page One had been five movies or something so that it could have been one each about the interest of David Carr, for example, who is very interesting and is in Page One. And Bill Cunningham is not in Page One, but he's a fascinating person, and this movie is really able to delve into what he does for the Times, but also his history, his whole career, his personal life, things like that.
I think that's an offbeat sleeper movie that people – may not have heard of,
right,
but I'm glad you said you drew their attention to it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's definitely worth seeing. It's on. It's available to watch instantly on Netflix, and it's available on DVD. And I think people would absolutely enjoy it.
Well, I have an upper too, but not the same kind.
Yeah,
but a director who all three of his films — he's only made three films in his lifetime — have been on my best 10 list. Tom McCarthy, who's a writer, director, actor,
right,
who doesn't appear in his own films, but has appeared in The Wire and a lot of,
right,
very good television. Tom McCarthy directed wrote and directed in 2003, The Station Agent. And if you people have not seen The Station Agent, please see it.
Yeah, I like The Station Agent a lot, yeah.
I saw it on television. It comes on and I'm saying, oh, here I am. I'm going to watch it again. Then The Visitor he did, which I liked very much in 2007. This year, he goes back to his roots as a young man when he was a wrestler and does a film called Win-Win, which is with Paul Giamatti, who discovers a young man who actually was a wrestler. And it is a humanistic film, which I very much admire.
I wasn't a huge fan of this one, I will say. I liked The Station Agent a lot. I was disappointed with The Visitor. I was disappointed with this one as well. I thought it was kind of like a predictable, you know, teacher bonding kind of story, just with a lot of the color sapped from it so that it seemed more indie and serious. And I like Paul Giamatti as an actor. I thought that kid was so flat. I don't know what his name is, but the actor who plays the young man. So I don't know.
Well,
he's
not really an actor. He's really a
maybe they should have hired an actor. I don't know. That might have done better.
I liked it and would defend McCarthy every film. He is another person who really appreciates the written word.
Yeah. Yeah. My next pick, my number six pick, is a movie that's turned out to be kind of divisive, I think. It was highly acclaimed. It was at Sundance early this year. And by the time I think it reached wide release, a lot of people, I mean, and I'm one of them, who had been hearing for so long about how great this movie was and maybe were a little put off that it wasn't the greatest thing that they'd ever seen. Martha Marcy May Marlene, with Elizabeth Olsen, who gives a really excellent and a big breakthrough performance for her as this young woman who has been in a cult, and she sort of leaves and doesn't really tell anyone that she's left, and she's trying to put her life back together, but having a lot of problems doing so.
Well, why did you initially were very anxious to see it?
Yes.
You saw it. It sounded like you were disappointed, but it winds up on your best 10 list.
I mean, I wouldn't say, I think a lot of other people were disappointed. I think
they were disappointed in the ending.
Yes, it's and a lot of like people that, were frustrated with the ending, which is I mean, we won't say too much about it, but it's an ambiguous ending, and I can see how it would be frustrating. To me, the whole movie is kind of ambiguous, and what I liked about it is that reflects the main character's point of view of being sort of unable to distinguish reality from dreams. At one point, she even says to one of the other characters, "Have you ever had a moment where you can't tell if you remember something or if you dreamed it?" And so I thought that was all of a piece with the themes of the movie. So I wouldn't say I was disappointed. I think maybe I would have liked it more had I not been hearing for so long about how great it was. But I thought it mostly lived up to what I'd heard
about
it.
But 6 is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely recommend it. I think it's an excellent film.
My 5th is the film that the organization that both of us belong to picked as the best film of the year, or the artist.
Yeah.
Michelle... Tell me his last name.
Hazanavicius? I'm going to mispronounce it, too.
No, it sounds good.
Yeah.
And it probably shouldn't work. And it may not be popular because it's black and white. And I've heard a lot of audiences are like kids, that if you don't give them color and a lot of movement. But it's charming and engaging. It makes allusions to films of the past. It's about when sound is first breaking into film. And I found it one of a kind. And it really was not as predictable as one might think.
Yeah. I think this movie is incredibly overrated. Not that I didn't enjoy it, but I think that the fact that it's ending up at the top of every organization's list of the best of the year is a little silly. It's fun. It's charming. I felt like it kind of ran out of steam, that it's a clever idea that doesn't necessarily sustain a whole feature film. And when it gets serious, I really liked the humor of it and the lightness of it, and the seriousness I didn't think worked. But I absolutely appreciate any movie that's willing to be in black and white and to be silent and to engage with all of that history.
You are not a fan of dogs. When there's a cute dog, I'm there.
The dog was good. I will say there's a grassroots campaign to get the dog nominated for best supporting actor. I don't think it's going to
succeed.
Screw
Snowy and go with this dog. And
definitely don't see Snowy. I don't think that movie's on.
That's an allusion to the Adventures of Tintin, which neither of us found.
No, I don't think we were impressed with that at all. So my 5th pick is, going from something like The Artist that's so open and charming, my 5th pick is an incredibly cynical and dark movie called Young Adult, directed by Jason Reitman and written by Diablo Cody, who were the people behind Juno, which I think ended up with a huge backlash. I enjoyed, but I definitely understand some of the criticisms that went to it, especially Diablo Cody's writing, which was full of a lot of catchphrases and sort of silly, quirky quips that got a little annoying. And this movie takes away all of that stuff. It's got Charlize Theron, who does a really excellent job, I think, as this horrible person, former kind of high school mean girl who comes back to her hometown and decides she's going to get her boyfriend back, or her ex-boyfriend, despite the fact that he's now married with a child and has no interest in her. And it's just a really, really fascinating portrait of somebody who is completely lost and yet completely self-confident.
Well, do you think – I just got an email from somebody that said he took his 2 teenage daughters, and they all loved it. Now, I think he loved it for different reasons than they may have.
Yeah.
Charlize is very lovable. Not in this film necessarily, just – what do you think about that? Would you think it appeals –
I think it could. Yeah, I think it could. I think you're right that maybe as an adult, there's a different appreciation because you can understand that sort of, even if you don't like her as a character, I think her longing for a time when she felt like her life made sense and that everything was going well for her is something that a lot of people can identify with. And I don't know. I mean, having not seen this as a teenager, obviously I can't say, but I wonder if maybe there's a sort of looking forward and realizing maybe that this is how adults look back on being a teenager or something.
I think there's still a teenager alive in you, Josh.
Oh, thank you. I don't know if
he's still there,
but I'll take it. All right. What's your next
number
pick?
4? I love French films. They have character. They have writing, but most people don't like the writing on the bottom of the screen. And so,
yeah.
But Of Gods and Men, which is one of the more spiritual films I've ever seen. It was based on actual events of 8 monks in a monastery in the mountains of Algeria that were threatened. And it is, again, it wasn't written and directed by the same man, but Xavier Beauvoir directed it, and I thought it was – spirituality is a hard thing to capture. And this was – its spirituality really spoke to me.
Yeah. I like that movie a lot, too. I don't have it on my list, but I definitely like that. And I appreciated, I think, exactly what you said, that it's hard to capture spirituality and that even as someone who's not spiritual, I felt like I could watch that movie and understand these people and why they were motivated to do what they did. And that's a big accomplishment. My number four pick is a movie that I know Tony did not like at all, which is Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is opening in Las Vegas next week on January 6th. And it's based on a novel by John le Carré, which I have not read. And it was also made into a miniseries with Alec Guinness in, I think it's 1979, which I haven't seen. And so maybe those versions of the story I would appreciate more. I don't know. But I felt like this version of the story, it's a sort of a spy thriller, you could say, although it's not a spy thriller in the sense of like Mission Impossible, where there's a lot of chase scenes and explosions. It's really a lot about sort of rumpled guys in ugly suits sitting in offices and making decisions that affect the rest of the world. And I really liked the way that it portrayed the spy world as this kind of cold, bleak, unfeeling environment where all of these really, really unhappy people are running our lives secretly.
I think you hit on it. I would not say don't see it. I would not particularly recommend it, but I wouldn't say don't see it. But I saw the six-hour version
right.
with Alec Guinness, and Alec Guinness to me gave the signature performance, and it has texture, and it has much more depth. The raves that
Gary Oldman
has gotten are beyond me because like, I think he's kind of a black slate.
I mean, I thought that was sort of that was what the character was though. He's this guy who's so removed from life, and I thought Oldman, who is known for really hammy performances a lot of the time, really internalized so much of what's going on.
But
with his character.
Is that acting or is that?
I do think it is because if you can. If the performance can reach you by doing that little, I think that's really impressive.
Alec Guinness's character would never have gone in the water as Oldman's character does.
Well, I mean,
George Smiley.
Right. I don't know. Like I said, I haven't seen that version, and I might really like it.
Now you probably wouldn't because this one would be in your mind first.
Yeah. And that may be the case. So, but I think this was really impressive. I liked the way that it told the story without having to hold your hand, which may have confused some people, but I really enjoyed this film.
I don't think it's confusing at all. I cannot understand when people are leaving saying, what happened?
You have to pay attention, but I felt like it all added up, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. What's your next pick, Tony?
2 and 2 = 5. That's the way it added up. My next pick is a film I've been waiting for all year. And I thought it had a viable chance to be the Oscar winner as Best Picture of the Year. I don't think now that it will win. I think it's a very good film, but I think it's probably too violent and too diffuse at the end. But it's David Fincher's version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I was afraid. I went to the film with trepidation because I thought nobody could be like Noomi Rapace, who's just learned English, by the way, and she's in the latest Sherlock Holmes film, and she's in another film. She's making a film with Jude Law, and she just learned English. And so I saw the Swedish version, and if you remember, I had the Swedish version at the top of my
right. I remember you liked that movie
year.
A lot, yeah.
But this girl, Rooney Mara. Burns her own hole in the screen.
Yeah.
I think she is as good as Noomi Rapace. And it has it should win the Best Soundtrack of the Year award because the sound is really a character in it. And Fincher, who is such a perfectionist, I think a lot of viewers probably will miss the perfectionism of David Fincher. But to me, it's a film that maybe I would edit a little bit. Maybe the 2 hours and 20 minutes is longer than it should have been. But it didn't make my top, but it's third on my list.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this movie too. I felt like, I mean, and I didn't like the Swedish one as much as you did. And I think I probably didn't like this one as much as you did either. But I felt like it wasn't different enough that, I mean, obviously I know it's based on a novel and they're both going to tell the same story and hit the same beats, but I love Fincher and I like a lot of his movies so much that I was hoping for him to do something more with this movie other than tell the story again well, which he does.
I think you got to see it twice and compare the versions.
Yeah.
This is very different.
Yeah.
When I went home, I said to myself, Fincher did not use the ending. What? Why didn't he use the ending?
Yeah.
It really let me down. I opened the novel, and he went back to the ending. He went back to the, I had remembered the ending of the other
film,
it's
a sweaty which is
film.
A sort of more upbeat ending. Yeah.
But and this one, unfortunately, what Fincher and his writer do is they try and make it more contemporary.
Right.
So at the end of the book, there's an allusion to Elvis, and this there's an allusion to leather.
Right.
I mean, it's not Elvis no longer style now, and that disappointed me. But it went back to Stieg Larsson and the myth of Stieg Larsson. I am just smitten by that the man died before any of these books were published, so it doesn't much less seen the films, the four films that have been made from his work. He didn't even see them in print.
Right, right.
It's Van Gogh all over again.
Make a movie about him eventually. Yes. My number three pick is a movie called Terry, which did not get a big release, but I think is worthy of being seen by a lot more people. It's directed by Azazel Jacobs, who is, I think, a really impressive indie filmmaker. Made a movie a couple years ago called Mama's Man that I also liked a lot. And Jacob Waisaki is the main character, Terry, who's a overweight teenager. He's kind of a teen outcast. And the plot of this movie sounds very much like a silly Hollywood movie where you've got the overweight kid outcast, and then you've got John C. Reilly, who plays the vice principal of his school, who takes an interest in Terry and decides to sort of take him under his wing and help him out. But what I liked about this movie is that it didn't go in that predictable kind of teacher-student inspirational comedy direction. It's funny, but it's not necessarily a comedy, and a lot of it is dark. And John C. Reilly's character is at least as screwed up and confused as the teen character. And so in their weird way, they end up connecting, but not in the way that you would expect them to. And I just think it's really well acted and well shot and really truthful to that kind of adolescent outcast experience.
Is there any film this year that you didn't appreciate that was about an outsider?
Well, I think that is, well, it's sort of the polar opposite of Young Adult, which is about an insider and how awful being an insider can turn out to be. Right. But hey, stories about outsiders are a great way to reach me.
My number two is, there were three films. Really, one of the strong things about this year was going back to the movies of the past.
Mm-hmm.
With The Artist, this one did, and Hugo, which isn't on my list, but I thought it's in my second 10, but Scorsese's film. But Midnight in Paris, to me, was almost ideal as a movie. I think Owen Wilson makes a better Woody Allen than Woody Allen does. Woody Allen wrote and directed it. He brings the City of Lights into vibrance. The only thing was, I'm a great fan of Scott Fitzgerald, and the person, Hiddleston, who plays Fitzgerald, was no way Fitzgerald. But I thought this was a poem, and this would have been the film that I recommended to most people, but I couldn't recommend it to children. But I would recommend to most adults as almost a perfect film dream experience.
Yeah. I liked it too. I thought it was kind of more superficial, more just kind of fluffy. I mean, I appreciated that it was actually kind of funny, that a lot of Woody Allen quote unquote comedies of the last several years have been really dreadful.
So you're a deep, profound outcast.
No, I'm not trying to be condescending about it. I think, to me, it was a movie that I had fun, but it didn't really stick with me beyond that. And that, I think, is maybe one of my big criterias for whether I loved a movie. But I did like it. I mean, and I'm a huge Woody Allen fan, so I absolutely
endorse
seeing that
movie. No, you're not. You're
not
Terry. You're
yes,
regular
I'm a slender Woody Allen fan. There you go.
Thank you.
My number two pick is a movie called Beginners from a writer-director, Mike Mills, who made a movie a couple years ago called Thumbsucker, which I also really enjoyed. And this movie is even better. It's got a great performance from Christopher Plummer, who had a very good year between that and the Dragon Tattoo. And he plays a man who, at the end of his life, his wife has passed away, and he's able to come out of the closet and live as a gay man, even though he's in his mid-70s and he's about to pass away. But he's able to have this kind of final moment at the end of his life. And the movie is less about him and more about his son, played by Ewan McGregor, and how he deals with this sort of upheaval in the way that he views his parents and the way that he thought of his life throughout his life. And he also ends up with a romance with a French woman played by Melanie Laurent, who was in Inglourious Basterds. And it's just, it's really, it's funny. And this movie is also uplifting about taking charge of your personal feelings, no matter what point you're at in your life, and feeling like you can allow yourself to be happy.
It sounds like you and I both appreciate films that are human.
Absolutely, yeah. I think this very much is. It's very much. I mean, it has some stylistic touches. It has a cute dog who speaks in subtitles, and a lot of silly little touches that you think might not work, but really do work as a reflection of these characters. And yeah, they're small emotional struggles, but that really, I think, connect with the audience.
Well, my number one is a film I was afraid was going to be like Cowboys and Aliens, that everybody was going to hate it because the director has a lot of baggage. And I saw it on demand, and then I wrote to the people in our Film Critics Society, in the Las Vegas Film Critics Society, and I thought maybe everybody would hate it. And it's some people appreciated it. Some people probably didn't. But Melancholia is a film that has stayed with me. You were talking about staying with one.
Right.
The impact, I can still remember, I can still feel imagery. And I think Kirsten Dunst gave as good a performance by a female, by an actress, as there was given this year. The first half is a party or a wedding of vapid, Kubrick-like individuals, empty and vacuous and fatuous. And then the second half is about a planet that is approaching the Earth and how this family reacts to the dread, the profound threat that is coming their way. And it is just, I think it's a work of art, and I don't think it would appeal to everybody, but I think that it's, some people will say, wow, that's a movie.
Yeah, that is a movie. I agree. I think Lars von Trier, who is the director and the writer here, I think his movies can be hard to like. They can be very hard to sit through. I think this was actually less hard to sit through than a lot of other von Trier movies that I've seen. I agree with you. I think Kirsten Dunst was amazing in this film. I thought this movie was so draining that it was sort of, not only that it was challenging to sit through, but that it was kind of exhausting to sit through. And I think that sapped my appreciation for it.
Well, it leaves us almost empty at the end because it's a film about death.
Yes.
And not a sweet afterlife,
right,
either.
Yeah, talk about a downer, this movie.
But I like downer.
Yes. I know. I mean, I do, too. I do, too. And it's actually, in a weird way, less bleak, I think, than some of his other films. But I thought the whole first half, like you said, with the vapid, fatuous, it was so vapid and it went on for so long that by the time you get to the second half, when there's some serious doom happening, I was kind of tired of everything at
that
point.
But the serious doom is saying that most of the world is not worth saving or thinking about,
right,
because they just go through their habits and their selfishness and their greed, and they're voting for Republicans and whatever it may be.
There were no Republicans in this movie.
Oh, right? I'm sorry.
You're just projecting.
I slipped that in.
So my number one pick is also, I think, a movie that maybe a lot of people would be put off by, but that I just found really, really fascinating. And I think it's similar to Beginners and to Terry in that it's about emotions, it's about relationships, it's about how people connect with each other. It's called Certified Copy. It's directed by Abbas Kiarostami, who's an Iranian filmmaker. And this is his first film outside of his native country. It's set in Europe. It features Juliette Binoche and William Schimmel, who's an English opera singer in his first role. And it's about half in English and half in French. And it's a weird film in that it appears to be about one thing at first, about these two characters who don't know each other, who kind of meet and are spending some time together and getting to know each other. And then somewhere along the line, and it's not entirely clear how or where, it shifts and it appears that these characters actually have been in a relationship for a long time. And throughout the film, it's hard to tell what is true and what is not true. And I think I really like that uncertainty.
Well, truth is not actuality.
Right.
Truth may be something that didn't actually happen. So,
right.
When did you see it? What point in the year did you see it?
I saw it, I think, early in the year, maybe over the summer.
I wish I had, because we were buried in screeners and screenings at the end. And the film, you have to sit and you really have to dwell and you have to be relaxed and repose and watch it. And I will wait until I'm in that mood again, if ever, to go back to it. Yeah. I want to say hi, Nina, because I haven't for a while.
Yes. Hello, and thank you. Thank you for listening to Nina. And thank you to listening for everyone who checks out the podcast for another wonderful year here at the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. And thanks, of course, to Tony Macklin for joining me to recap the year. And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.